feeling down? Let's talk. Well, I'm ready to talk here. So first of all, Dr. Bernard Schwartlander, that's an amazing name. What is depression? How can you give us a definition about what this is about?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, depression is not just a very simple single symptom. It actually comes along with a number of symptoms that people may experience, like it's increased tiredness, a lack of drive, so you can't get up in the morning. It may be change in interest. So you have been reading books a lot and suddenly you're not interested in any books anymore. You don't like to do this anymore. So these changes can be very significant. I mean, a simple tiredness, especially after a long party weekend, is of course not depression, but if that tiredness in conclusion with other, you know, together with other symptoms actually lasts for a long time, you should probably think about it and you should start to talk about it and maybe seek help to be able to actually overcome this state.
So one of the things you had said is it's kind of a time sensitive thing, as I understand, because my first question was, how do I know I have depression? Let's say I'm lonely, okay, and I'm sad about that. I think many times with something like loneliness, maybe, you know, you would have these kind of symptoms, and this could last for a while until maybe you meet someone or you have a good group of friends, these kind of things. So are those two the same? And what's, and if they're not, what's the difference between something like loneliness and depression?
I think introducing the term loneliness here is actually very, very important and very good. More and more, we actually understand that depression may be best described as a state of loneliness, but the loneliness is not just you're lonely physically, so you're alone by yourself without other people. The stage of depression and loneliness is actually when you're with other people and you still feel alone. And that may happen, you know, within big crowds. It may happen to young people, to old people. And if that lasts for a long time, and it may go along with, you know, as I said, with a loss of things that you like to do, you don't like to do these things anymore, then I think I would start to really think about it and go to a doctor and or go to somebody who you trust and talk to them about it and see how you could overcome, you know, your inner state of loneliness.
Oh, I think that's a really good and important notion for people, as these are different concepts, but they seem to sometimes be shadows of each other. And what got us also very interested this year is with the WHO has put up an animation video called I Have a Black Dog, and it's a very interesting analogy to depression. Let's have a listen and get an idea of what this black dog is when it comes to depression.
I had a black dog. His name was Depression. Whenever the black dog made an appearance, I felt empty and life just seemed to slow down. He could surprise me with a visit for no reason or occasion. The black dog made me look and feel older than my years. When the rest of the world seemed to be enjoying life, I could only see it through the black dog. Activities that usually brought me pleasure suddenly ceased to.
Oh, when you listen to that and think of the black dog, I remember one of my good friends used to have a black dog as she grew up as a little girl. So I think that the black dog is something friendly, someone that we turn to. Why is the black dog associated with depression?
See, I think you're absolutely right, and that I think this is the reason why it's so wonderful to have this example, this picture, because the black dog should be your friend. What happens if you get depression or if you're prone to depression, that black dog, which should be your cuddly friend that you embrace, can actually grow very big and can be daunting, and you can't get it away anymore, and it sort of blocks your thinking. It may even take over your thinking. You can't get out of that hole anymore. And what we want to talk about is what are the means to actually make sure that you control that black dog from growing big. And if it is big, how we can make sure that it grows smaller again, that you can manage it. And it becomes, again, the cuddly little thing. But again, also, what is very important is very often or normally, it's not the question of getting rid of the black dog. All of us have strong sides and have weak sides. It's how we manage it and how we can make sure that it doesn't take over our mood and our decisions and our feelings. That's, I think, what we need to think when we think depression.
You know, also talking about this black dog, and you know, watching that video, I thought it was very good. But one question I did have is, how does one get depression? So, you know, let's say in the loneliness example, that's maybe an experience, something that's happened to you. Is that what depression is? Is that just that outside force that comes into your life that all of a sudden you react that way, and maybe you react in such a strong way that it's considered depression? Or is it genetic? Is it something that could be even contagious, like you're living with someone, they're depressed, and somehow that kind of mood travels over to you? Can you kind of talk about how you get depression?
As you rightly described, depression is actually not just one thing. And it is also not caused by just one thing. There's multiple factors that actually have an impact how you can cope with the dark sides of life, the dark sides of a day. There are genetic factors, but there can also be external factors. For example, using drugs makes you less resistant to some of these negative impacts. So it can actually cause depression to come forward. But at the same time, I think it is very important to also realize that, you know, objective stress factors can be a cause to really a depression to break out. These stress factors can be stress in work, stress at school, you know, a exam coming up, a failure exam, somebody dying in your family, or misplaced people. I mean, what we see sometimes around the world where people, you know, in war zones, in disaster zones, I mean, that's massive, massive stress that they're exposed to. And of course, that can be a factor for depression as well.
Yeah, a follow-up too, you know, and I guess the worst case example is if someone has depression, you know, that's a struggle. For sure, that's a struggle. But, you know, I guess the worst case scenario would be someone thinking that the only way out of this kind of hole, which is how depression's often described, is doing something like committing suicide. My question to you is suicide always caused by depression, or is... can the two exist without each other, or does one always beget the other?
Suicide usually happens when people don't see a way out anymore.
Right.
They feel in a hole, they feel caught, and they basically just say have no other choice than actually doing something very radical. Now, the way we increasingly describe this, we get away from saying people, you know, choose to end their life or commit suicide. Because what happens is that at that moment, people are not actually taking an active decision. It just happens to them. It's like an explosion. So we're talking more about dying from suicide, like another cause of disease. So it's not a mental, rational stage. It's almost like an explosion. There's no way out anymore. So that is why it's so important to find the ways to overcome that very critical moment and go and see a doctor if you feel that you're bad. You know, nothing is worth, you know, ending your life. Every person has great value. You have great values. Don't feel, and if you know, that you're not worth anything, that's not true. And if you get stuck in that thought, go and see a doctor to help you over that moment, and we will fix it.
Yes, I think that's really important to seek necessary and professional help. And also, I think for us and everyone who's listening to this show, we all know that depression in the most extreme form could be a person's life ending. So this is definitely a very serious matter, not only for those who are struggling with it, or people who know other people who are struggling with it, and also, you know, there is this ultimate result that could be very bad, and we don't want any of this for anyone we love, of course. And also, there is this popular claim online about if you suffer from certain symptoms, such as feeling very depressed in the mood, loss of interest or pleasure, feeling worthless, agitation or restlessness, fatigue, trouble in making decisions, and trouble to sleep, change in appetite, and even the thought of death or suicide. These thoughts and symptoms, and if it happens to you for more than 2 weeks, then it has been seen as an amateur way of self-diagnosis, saying, oh, maybe I have depression. So, Dr. Schwatlander, do you think this popular claim online holds any truth?
No, it does hold truth. That's for sure. No, but I also want to be clear that sometimes, especially if you feel down and tired, you may be caught up in all of these criteria. You suddenly feel, oh, yes, that's me too. So don't get into a panic, but go and see help. Seek help if you really feel that these symptoms persist with you, and it, especially if you feel it's getting worse and worse and you can't find a way forward. Go find a doctor, find a specialist, talk to a friend, make sure that the friend goes with you so that you're together, you're not alone in this process. And you will see how that can actually help you to find the balance again in life, to be able to see the positive things more than the negative. And step by step, you will be able to overcome it.
You know, so a lot of people, especially I would say in the United States, it's very common to self-medicate. Not always something like substance abuse, something like alcohol, but like I've had friends that have used medication. And when they've used this medication, thinking that it's the cure, it's going to fix it. Oh, God, I've waited so long to just feel happy again. And I've talked to these friends that have taken this, and they actually would get off of it because many times how they described it more than once is that taking this medication to cure depression, or at least that's what they thought they were doing, they would never, I guess how they described it, hit those lows, but they would also never hit those highs. And so I guess, you know, where modern medicine kind of fails in this regard, or in some regards with some people, you know, is there a cure to something like depression? Is, you know, in the video of the black dog that follows you around, it sounded like it's maybe something you have to learn to live with. But is there a cure? Is there ever a scenario where that black dog isn't there at all?
Well, that's a very good question. And there's many forms of depression, and some are more difficult to treat than others, of course. And people are different, and they're living in different environments. The stress factors they're exposed to are different, and you cannot easily change all of those immediately. I mean, you have a job. It's stressful. It's not everybody's choice to just quit the job and don't have an income anymore. I mean, you need an income, so we realize that. So, but one thing, there's a couple of things I would like to say. One, self-medication is never a good thing. You know, if you use alcohol, drugs, or whatever, recreational drugs, to just make you momentarily feel better, usually what happens, and almost regularly what happens, you feel much worse afterwards. So it actually, you weaken your body and you weaken your resilience to actually cope with these stresses. Now, the second point I want to make is that there is actually very good medication for certain medical conditions of depression, but very often patients will take those for a certain period of time. And at the same time, you have to also think about, you know, the mechanisms that have happened to lead you to depression and how you could cope better with them. So you can learn to actually deal with that black dog and handle with it. And that's why I really like that example, that picture so much, because it's not that, yes, there's a little black dog and I have to get rid of it. What we have to make sure is that we stop the little black dog, the cuddly thing, from crowing and taking over. And if it's too big, we have to make sure that it shrinks again, it becomes small, so it can handle it. A sad moment can be a very powerful moment.
Yeah.
Just let's not make the sad moment the only thing there is. So that's, I think, what this whole thing is about.
Yes. And I think that concept of being able to acknowledge, recognize, realize the existence of the little black dog and be okay with it, and also realize that we need to contain him or it from growing too big. And that is, I think that's a very healthy way to look at depression, because this word, it starts with a D. It usually has really negative connotation for people, when we probably need to reevaluate what this is about and also look at solutions. We are going to have a short break, and right after this break, we will come back talking about the scale of depression and also its situation here in China. For more interesting information and discussion on Roundtable, well, stay tuned.
Join us every day from 1 to 2 p.m. on Easy FM for Roundtable, making sense so you don't have to.
You're listening to Roundtable with myself, He Young, Ryan Price in the studio, and today we have a special guest, Dr. Bernard Schwaltlander, World Health Organization representative in China, and today we're talking about depression. Also, I think a lot of us are interested to know how depression has developed in China and what is the scale of depression in the world and also in the Chinese context.
Yes, worldwide, we estimate that about 320 million or even some more are living with depression today as we speak. Now, that's a large number. That's a total number, for example, of the United States. Every single inhabitant living in the United States feeling depressed. And it would be basically the total number of adult people living in all of Africa, whole continent. I mean, that's the magnitude that we are talking about. That's about 4% of the total population. And interestingly, the latest studies we have from China show a very similar rate. So the population, about 4% of the population, which amounts to some 50 million people in China, are living with depression as we speak. Now, the other statistic, I think, which is very important, is that about 1 in 10 have at least once in a lifetime recognized symptoms of depression. So that's a very large number for any disease. If you have any disease, that's about 10% in people. That's huge. It's big. And in one of the most impressive figures that I've seen lately is the 1 in 4. That's 1 in 4 students of the university in Beijing, in other big cities in China, but also other cities around the world say that they actually feel depressed. And, you know, this is the future of our society. So if the people who are the future of our societies that should lead the world, the humanity into the future, feel bad rather than feeling getting out of bed in the morning and say, well, I want to fix this. I'm really strong. That's a very bad sign.
You know, you say, you know, waking up and maybe these things you can do to pull yourself hopefully out of depression, these kind of things, which led me to believe that is depression a choice? I mean, because I've seen friends who suffer from depression. They, you know, one of the most common things is you don't get out of your bed. You just don't see a need to. And you know, I've sat there, well, you know, in my younger days, not really understanding what was going on, but being like, you know, you're choosing to stay in that bed. Like, get up, push yourself. Like, once you start seeing that there's stuff out there, life isn't so bad. I mean, you can't experience that from your bed. So it's your choice. Like, stop feeling this way and change it, because nobody can change this for you. You have to want to change it yourself. So at the end of the day, would you also say that in many regards, is depression a choice?
See, this is actually an excellent point you're making. And you obviously, even if you had depression, you got yourself out of it. But the point is that, you know, telling this to somebody who is depressed, who is in a clinical stage of depression, will not help. Because they're already in a stage where the dog has grown too big.
Yeah.
And they don't manage. And that's probably what describes depression. So it's not just, you know, feeling tired. It's basically inability of overcoming this yourself, of recreating that balance. And that's what the clinical symptoms is. So let's not belittle that.
Yeah. And so actually, you bring up a really good point. So say I see a friend and they're suffering from depression. And, you know, of course, my first thing to say is, come on, get yourself out of bed. There's life's out there and you got to experience it. You'll realize it's not so bad. But you can't say that. Obviously, they're in a dark place. And like you said, this dog has grown too big. So how can I help them? What should I say?
Right. The first thing is, of course, to listen. Having the feeling there is somebody who takes me seriously and listens is extremely important. The second thing is that, of course, it can help to get that person out of that sort of that cycle, that daunting cycle. And that can be, you know, if you know what that person likes to do or liked to do, go for a walk, take them out, you know, break the cycle of thinking only negative. That can help a lot. Like, you know, doing some sport activity. You know, I had a friend when I had a, you know, my partner died from suicide 15 years ago. Obviously, I came you know, that also touched me. It was a very difficult phase. And for 15 years, I didn't speak about it. But I do recall when I came back home and I had a friend who came to me and said, let's go out and play tennis. And then, okay, initially I didn't want to because I also started to feel really depressed. But that he took me out and we played tennis and we had a coach. And that coach suddenly started to laugh because we were just smashing the ball. And it wasn't really playing a game. We were just hitting the ball and we wanted to kill it. I said, what the hell are you doing? But it felt so good.
Yeah.
It felt it really released the pressure. It made me feel much better. And I think that's just an example that I want to give is, you know, go out. And if you manage to get your friend out, but there will be also situations where you just have to help your friend to see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, find the address of a doctor where you can go to, because the person feeling depressed will not be or may not be in a position to do that him or herself. Take them there. Be with them. Very often they don't need to talk much, but, you know, take them through that process. That can be extremely important and helpful.
So it's important to break from that negative atmosphere or state of mind or cycle that the person has been stuck in. Try whatever you can to take them away from that. And maybe also, I think for some of us, or maybe let's say you have an employee, a coworker who's going through something difficult, maybe you can't even pinpoint if it's depression or not. What can you do about that?